Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
We're going to have some fun tonight. My guest today is Catherine Ewing, who is a fascinating psychotherapist who has introduced all kinds of alternative modalities into her practice. We'll be with Kathy in a few minutes, but first, our metaphysical moment for this evening. I started out talking about something I say all the time, which is everything is energy, everything is connected, everything is conscious, and everything is interactive. So let's talk about everything being conscious, which on the face of it sounds just a little weird. How could inanimate objects, things that appear not to be intelligent that don't talk to us, how could they be conscious? How could they have intelligence? Well, quantum physics both demonstrates and creates even new questions about just what is intelligence and what is consciousness. One of the things that the whole quantum physics dilemma creates is if you observe a particle, and we're talking about a photon, a particle of light, or maybe an electron, single subatomic particle. If you observe that particle in an experiment, it behaves differently. It will do different things than if it is not being observed. And that observation might be that you put a camera or a counter in the experiment that tells you how many of them are going through the experiment. This is submicroscopic stuff. And it will change its behavior. How does that work? So we look into the realm of shamanism, and shamans will tell you that everything is conscious and that you can talk to everything and not only get a response from it, get information from it, but also be able to ask it to cooperate. And this goes back to everything is energy and everything is connected. If everything is energy and everything is connected, then everything is everywhere because it's all connected and you can talk to it. And out of that conversation can come both information, and part of shamanic work is out of that conversation can come changes. So people say to me usually, well, rocks don't talk. How do rocks talk? Well, rocks move at the speed that rocks move, so rocks don't talk fast. If you ask a rock a question, it's going to come as a feeling. It's going to come as a thought, which may take a little while to form. My teacher was a medicine man, one of my teachers, and I noticed that when I was out on my morning run and I went past this particular grove of trees, as I came up over the rise so that I could see the trees, the leaves would start to rustle. The wind would kick up and the leaves would start to rustle. And it happened every single time. And I spoke to him about it and he said, oh, they're talking to you. What you need to do is go to the grandmother tree, find the tree that was the first tree that started that grove of trees that seeded the rest of the grove, and go and honor her and thank her for her communication with you, and watch what happens with the wind, because the wind is the voice of the trees. And every day when I did that run, I had a conversation with those trees. There are many things. If you listen to the birds will answer your thoughts. If you listen to the noises in your house or in your car, frequently you'll get a noise just after you ask a question. It's really interesting when you start realizing that everything communicates and is responding to you. And from there, you can move into this realm of having a conversation with it and asking for help. So that may have been a little bit more than some of you have thought about. So let's just end our metaphysical moment for today. If you would like to ask me questions about that, go to househealing.com and click on Ask David, and you can ask me a question. So tonight's guest is the wonderful Catherine Ewing, and I think I'm going to let her tell more about who she is and what she does. She's a psychotherapist in Connecticut. And how you doing tonight, Kathy?
Good. I love it when people call me wonderful.
I've called you wonderful before.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have.
So
actually, I know you're finished with your metaphysical moment, but I was thinking of my microwave, which you spoke to the consciousness of so that it wouldn't kill all the nutrients in my food before. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And that was something I would not necessarily have thought of, but I spoke to somebody else who had done it for years and was very familiar with that kind of communication. And out of that conversation, I experimented with it. So yeah. Every conversation you have is an opening to do something differently.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because the other thing that it made me think of, and this is something I would have dismissed many, you know, years ago, and well, I'll get into my story a little more. When I work with my clients, I often have them speak to body parts or, you know, have a conversation with a wounded part of themselves or a physical pain in order to gain information or give it reassurance or find out where the healing needs to happen. So it's not that much of a stretch. I mean, you know, as I said, 20 years ago, I would have just said, oh, this guy is loony.
Well, and then
there's once in a while, I still say that about you, but, you know, only with the deepest respect. And so, you know, it's been an interesting part of my transition to recognize that there is consciousness in everything.
There's some interesting evidence from organ transplant surgery, where someone will get, for example, a heart transplant, and suddenly their tastes in music or in food or other things will change dramatically. So the story I heard was an 80-year-old woman who got a heart from an 18-year-old young man who was killed in a motorcycle accident. And suddenly she started craving beer and hamburgers and liking rock music. And that's something that can be dealt with shamanically in terms of clearing the energy of the organ donor, because that's the historic information about that person. It's their emotions, their, you know, who they are that's still in the organ. And some of the stories are funny and some of them are very strange, but I've heard probably half a dozen of those stories.
It's very cool, and this is a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, that's always fun with you anyway, but I see that, you know, a sort of a similar thing with clients with multiple personality disorder, where each personality, you know, each aspect of that person will, you know, might have different eyesight, might write with a different hand, will walk differently, the voice will change. It's a little bit different than an organ transplant, but it's another fascinating aspect of the consciousness and who's present in that moment and how that manifests.
Right. You know? And one of the things that's been confirmed in the clinical hypnotherapy world is that frequently those are possessions, that the personality that comes through is another, not just an aspect of the personality of the individual who we understand as being that body, but is somebody else, is a ghost typically, that has managed to push that personality out of the way. And the conversations frequently sound like, oh, he doesn't know I'm here. You know, that they know about, some of them
right,
know
that
about
lack of integration, yeah.
Right. Some of them know about each other and know which one is supposed to be in charge and are tricking it and all of that. And what happened in the hypnotherapy community, because I started reading about possession as I was dealing with it more and more, and none of them believed it. They were all skeptics. But they found that if they dealt with the subpersonalities as being separate external personalities, that there was resolution, that they could deal with them, they could get them to leave. And if they dealt with what appeared to be past life memories as fantasies, there was no resolution. But if they dealt with them as being real events that were being understood as being from another time, then they could get resolution of them. So the skeptics very quickly were won over by the reality of what they could do in clinical practice.
It's fascinating. That whole arena is so fascinating. So let me segue, because you asked about my history.
Yep.
I noticed in your blog that you referred to me as a traditional psychotherapist, so I guess I'll start there and set the record straight. I actually came to psychotherapy through the back door. I mean, I have a master's in social work, but I never focused on casework or psychotherapy while I was in school. I was a community organizing and group work major with a minor in women's studies, as I had a minor in women's studies as an undergraduate as well. So my work in social work for the first 15 or so years was very grassroots. I was a little judgmental at the time, and I thought psychotherapy was for the bourgeoisie, for people who had a lot of time and a lot of money to sit around contemplating their navels. I've changed my position on that a little bit, but, you know, at the time I wanted to do some social work that I could really, you know, sort of dig into and get my hands dirty, and I did. I did a lot of very grassroots women in poverty, you know, community organizing, sexual assault, rape crisis counseling, domestic violence work, union organizing. I had my Norma Rae moment where they escorted me out of the bank telling what a sick young woman I was because I tried to organize the tellers. And child abuse. I worked in the area of child abuse and specifically child sexual abuse, which is where I started, you know, doing the work with people who were survivors of some pretty significant abuse, which may in some cases did result in the multiple personality disorder or dissociative disorder. So that was sort of my background, and it wasn't until, Julie is 18 now, so 17 or so years ago after my youngest child was born that I made the shift into psychotherapy, and I really went in as a student into a practice that I knew some of the other therapists in. I had referred a lot of my DCF, you know, cases to them and had worked with them over the years and made that shift myself in like 1994. And that was actually the beginning of my movement into a more spiritual place as well. Up until that point, you know, I'd been raised Catholic, very traditional, large Irish Catholic family, and had sort of moved away from organized religion. And while I was working in therapy practice, I was introduced to meditation and guided imagery and some other things that, you know, I had scoffed at an earlier time in my life and really began to move more in that direction. And then became trained in a variety of healing techniques, starting with therapeutic touch and Reiki, and moving on from there. So that was the beginning of my journey, both into psychotherapy and almost simultaneously into a more spiritual and metaphysical approach to things.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this. It's interesting that the first hands-on healing that I learned was also therapeutic touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, for me, because I was a social worker, I had to be very careful about not touching people. So I learned therapeutic touch because I could just be sort of work in their field as opposed to actually, you know, putting hands on. So,
right.
And even then, you know, I had to be very careful about who I offered it to. And I mostly did it with clients who were coming in who weren't able to engage in the therapy because they were either so anxious or they had a migraine or, you know, some other barrier to being able to really have any benefit from the psychotherapy session. So I would do a little bit of therapeutic touch just to sort of smooth out their energy field first, and then, you know, we could move more easily into the more traditional psychotherapy. But it didn't take me long to realize that the traditional psychotherapy was not really for me, you know, and my first clue was that I was coming home with a headache every day saying, something's not working here. It's just, you know, I'm working way too hard and folks aren't getting the benefit that, you know, it seems like they should get. And that's when I started opening up to the energy work and realizing, oh, okay, there's something else going on here. And started getting all the training, and then subsequently left that practice and opened Spirit Matters, which is, you know, the holistic healing center that I have here in Ellington, with my partner, Lisa, where we, you know, offer a variety of things now. We have different healers who work with us, and she's a psychotherapist as well, so we both have our practices. So that's a little bit about my journey. Right around the time that I made the decision to leave the practice that I was in, I was just beginning a Master's in Divinity program. So, you know, that's another piece. I became an ordained minister through the Beloved Community, which is James Twyman's community. Mm-hmm. And that was back in the early 2004 and 2005. So that was another piece of the journey. So it's all been, you know, I sometimes marvel at people who have one moment of enlightenment and, you know, and they know everything. And I feel like I've been on this path chipping away for, you know, well, I don't know how many lifetimes or how many years, but, you know, probably 20 really conscious years in this lifetime of, I keep waiting for that one moment of, you know, enlightenment, but I don't think that's in the cards for me. I think it's just this day by day doing the work, healing my own stuff, clearing out old energy that doesn't serve me.
Most of the people that I've heard of that have those moments of enlightenment either have prepared for it for decades with meditation, or it was a life and death situation. So barring life and death situations or being in a cave for a very long time, probably the way you're doing it is about right. And one of the challenges of this time is those of us that are on a spiritual path doing this work are doing it while we're managing to be in the world and be in household. So even in India, where the tradition is that men go off to seek enlightenment, that's after you raise your family. So they start their family when they're in their early 20s. By the time they're in their 50s, their kids have been married, and then they can go off and find their guru and go up to the mountains or do whatever they choose to do. It's called being a pogi versus being a yogi. And that's built into the culture that there's a transition point in your life where you seek enlightenment. And you're separate from a household and the regular community. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're doing it all at the same time. We got kids. We've got, you know, other responsibilities. We're supposed to talk to other people in a normal way.
Right. We're not supposed to live in a cave, huh?
Right. Although maybe the internet's a cave. I don't know.
But certainly the transition, I mean, maybe we just call it a midlife crisis. I don't know. You know, in India, you get to go be in a cave, and around here, you get to buy Harley. I don't know.
Right. Red sports car.
Yeah. But, you know, that's interesting because, in my frustration over the years with what I consider the slowness of my progress, I've had my occasional rants with God. You know, that sounds something like, what's wrong with me? Am I chopped liver? You know, how come everybody else is getting it and I'm not getting it? And, you know, I've had a number of responses from some physical people and some non-physical people who have said, it's just not the time. You still have young kids. You know, I was sort of getting that message that, yep, you know, there are stages and you just need to be where you are now and trust that, you know, everything has its own timing. That sounds so cliche.
Well, there was a turning point for me where literally I had to make that choice. My healing practice at the time was really starting to take off, and I was learning some of the work that I'm doing now, some of the stuff that people describe as dark and dangerous. And then I had a kid, and I just looked at it and had a conversation with my guides that basically said, okay, I get I'm supposed to do this very intense work, and I've got this child to take care of and protect, and I can't do them at the same time in the same place. So you show me how to do it. What's supposed to happen here? And my practice literally dried up in 3 weeks. Nobody called. It's like, okay, got it.
Not sure that was the answer I was looking for.
But. Wasn't the answer I was looking for, but the answer was, you know, your job right now is to take care of this child, who's a very special child, and you do as much of the work as you can, but you're not going to do that stuff that you were just getting to the edge of, and the time will come, and it did. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a transition when she was older, and I was no longer married and in that situation, and had more time when I was alone. And I was able to go back to that with everything I had learned over that 10 years. Mm-hmm. So,
right, because you don't ever stop the learning or the growing. You just portion of doing.
right. And it's, you know, instead of being the total focus and the drama of your life, it becomes more of the background. But, you know, I know for me, I can't have it. Well, could I make it go away? Probably I could ignore it. But, you know, this is what I do.
Right. So. Well, and I would say even not it's what you do, but it's who you are. And, yeah. I think that was something that I came to at a certain point, probably 10 years ago now, that this isn't something that I just do. I don't just meditate or do energy work or integrate these things into my psychotherapy. This is who I am.
Right. Exactly right.
That was that was kind of an eye-opening moment for me, that it isn't just something I do. It's funny how just a few words can shift,
right.
can have such a profound, shift in consciousness. So,
right.
Well, it reminds me, I keep just getting reminded of things from my past. It's interesting, but years when I was in the seminary I was talking to my coach at the time, we were having a coaching call. And I think I was talking to her about learning some new modality because, I need yet another modality. I need a few more initials behind my name. But I was expressing my frustration about something not where. And she just stopped me and she said, did it ever occur to you that you are the modality or something like,
right.
Or you are the tool, or you are the technique, and it just sort of stopped me dead in my tracks, and I was like, oh, okay. And it's taken me a number of years to wrap my head around it, and I'm still not sure that I fully get it. I mean, I get it, but I know that I could get it at another level.
Well, have you ever seen pictures of Sai Baba at his ashram when he would bless the people that were waiting outside, just walking around?
I read the book. I don't know that I've seen the picture.
The film is really interesting because he would walk around, graciously smiling at people. For some people, he'd walk over and pay a little more attention. For some people, he'd walk over, kind of focus for a minute, nod his head, maybe touch them on the shoulder or on the head, or take the sacred ash, the vibhuti, and put it on their forehead or something, and just smile, and then he'd walk off. And you knew something profound was going on, but there was no drama at all. I saw the same thing. The Dalai Lama visited Northampton, and I knew if I went there, I wouldn't see anything, so I watched it on TV. And, because they were going to have cameras on him. You could actually see him. So he came out with a small entourage, but he came out, and there was a woman at the ropes calling him, saying, you know, Your Holiness, I've spoken to you. And he walked right over like he knew her. And the conversation was about her mother, who was very seriously ill, and she had contacted him. And she held out her picture. And, you know, he comforted her for a second, took the picture and held it to his third eye, to his forehead, and contemplated the picture for a few more seconds and said, no, no, she'll be okay. She's too young. She's not going to die. And handed the picture back and smiled at her and walked off.
Mm-hmm.
No drama. No, this is a healing. No, he just had already done it. And it occurred to me that the drama that we create, the method that we learn, the steps that we take, serves two functions. One is it creates a drama for the client, so the client has an experience that something happened and leaves the healing alone. Because you do the energy work, but the client has a habit of how they use their energy that created the problem you're fixing. And if they don't believe that something happened, they'll just put it back the way it was. And then they'll say, oh, this stuff doesn't work. Well, they made it not work. The other thing is that it creates a drama for us, so we think we're doing something.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I may have told you this before, but, you know, years ago I learned, more, as I said, several different energy healing techniques. And, you know, one of them was theta healing and the DNA activation. And it was all done pretty much in silence. And I'm not terribly comfortable with silence myself. I'm getting better at it. That big Irish Catholic family, if you didn't speak up, you just, you know, you can't. But anyway, you know, I was probably not really sure myself as a fairly new, you know, practitioner what was going on. But what we were basically doing was looking to clear energy blockages on four different levels. So it would be either on, you know, sort of the level of, you know, this third dimensional plane, or then it would be, you know, sort of the genetics going back however many, you know, generations, or it would be a past life experience, or a soul contract. So there, you know, there were four different levels that we were looking at to do healing on, and sort of intuitively, as we just sat with our hand on the person's forearm or hand or whatever, we would check in with each level and hear yes or no, and if there was a sort of a belief that was in the way, you know, we would kind of hear what the belief was, and then we, you know, we would sort of check in with the person, hear what we got, and then ask their permission to, you know, remove those beliefs or those blockages and insert a new positive belief. Mm-hmm. And but it was, except for that little bit of exchange, it was almost all done in silence. And like you said, you know, it was, the person would kind of be like, well, is that it? Because if they didn't feel something, it could feel like, you know, well, they were just laying there. Well, right. Years later, I learned EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which right. I use almost, you know, I don't want to say exclusively, but I use it with almost everyone now. I think it's a, you know, an incredibly versatile and powerful system for releasing old energy. But I realized it's the same exact thing, but they put words to it, and now it's being, you know, over the last, you know, however many years, thanks to Gary Craig, it has credibility. But you're doing the same exact thing. You're pulling out the old programming, whether it's a belief from this lifetime, whether it's something genetic, whether it may be a past life experience or a soul contract. You're pulling out those old programs and reinserting a new program, new language, and you're doing it all energetically and having the person tap on, you know, their acupuncture points. And it just blew me away. I said, oh, my God, this is the same thing as theta healing. But now it's credible because we've put words and a process to it that people can, okay, I'm going to tap here, and I'm going to tap here, and I'm going to tap here, and I'm going to say these words. All of a sudden, it's acceptable and credible.
So that music is telling us that we're going to go to a commercial break. We'll be back after the break, and I'll give out the number for people to call in if you have questions or comments. And we'll keep talking to my wonderful guest, Kathy Ewing, and having more fun. We'll be back in a minute on Empower Radio.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, sweetheart. Where's the little guy? In school?
Yep, just dropped him off. Is your hair getting whiter, or is that paint?
Actually, I'm painting your old room.
Did you take down my David Cassidy posters?
Nah, I painted over them.
Dad!
Just kidding.
Why were you painting my old room?
You had a purple room.
Moby Grape.
Well, your mom and I are upsizing. We're hosting a foreign exchange student from Cairo.
What about me and your grandson?
Come on, it'll be a great experience for everybody.
We'll never see you. You'll be taking her to the museum and the zoo and...
Sweetheart, you know how great it'll be for my grandson to experience another culture. He could learn another language, new customs.
I never thought of that. Got an extra paintbrush?
The time is now. Open up your life. Find out how to have a foreign exchange student live with you. Every family has something special to share. Go to hoststudents.org. That's hoststudents.org.
Imagine. Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
We're back. So I'm here with Kathy Ewing, and I want to give out the phone number for people to call in if you have comments or questions. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Don't lurk. Give us a call. It would be fun. So, Kathy, you were talking about EFT, which I know is a big part of your practice, and you actually do it in a way that's very different from what I've seen other people do with it, because you use the acupuncture meridians and not so much of the talking part of it.
Well, I am a, sort of a self-taught in the basic EFT. I never actually got certified in it, but I started using it on myself years ago and then sort of playing around with it with clients. But then a number of years ago, I had the opportunity to work with Henry Grayson, I'm sorry, in New York. And he had an adapted version, which I have further adapted. And so it just felt much more powerful to me. So I actually use a Tibetan singing bowl to sort of help center the client and, you know, bring their focus inward. I just think the bowl has an incredible sound and vibration that really helps somebody just be much more present and kind of leave their thoughts at the door. And then we do a little bit of guided imagery, and we actually ask that different images or memories of whatever it is that they're trying to release come to the surface. And that's a little bit different than the regular EFT, where you're tapping and you may have something come to the surface, but you're not specifically calling it up. And I think it's very powerful to call it up. Some amazing things come up for people. And then once the images are present, then I ask them to tap into whatever emotions are connected to those images, and also what they're noticing in their body, you know, what's being manifested physically. So is their chest feeling tight, or are they having a scratchy throat, or all of a sudden do they have a pain in their head? And then we do some breath work to release and, you know, sort of soften up and allow that energy to dissipate. Then we start what's more traditionally the EFT, the tapping part. And actually, I just touch. I don't tap. But, you know, we do use those acupuncture acupuncture or acupressure points. And we just do round after round of that until, you know, we bring the, what they call in EFT, the subjective unit of distress. SUD, just in case you're curious, down to, you know, you, and I use muscle testing as well to see if there's any resistance to letting these, the energy of these things go. So we try to work with the resistance first and, you know, release the resistance so that the EFT, you know, actually lands or has a much better chance of working. And then once we determine that, you know, we've gotten that energy down to a certain point, so that's the pulling out the old programming, then we go back and we reinsert a new program. So, you know, instead of David 1982 or, you know, whatever, you know, now you would have David 2011. So we would go in and take a positive statement that would be maybe not exactly the opposite of, but something, you know, pretty close to the opposite of the thing that they were trying to release, and we reinstall that. So we're literally creating new neural pathways. So we've pulled the old energy out, and now we're, you know, we're reinforcing, and we do the same thing. We use the bowl. We allow the breath to take the energy through the body. We identify the new emotions that they're feeling with this new belief. Very powerful, you know. I just find that it works with almost anything, you know, phobias, trauma issues, anxiety, physical pain, just about anything, you know, people come in the door with. I find that the EFT can really be a very powerful technique. And I like it because at least, you know, the basic version, they can take home and do it at home. They don't have to just mm-hmm. wait till they come into the office for it. It's, you know, it's a very simple technique, really. It's profound, but it's simple. So I tell people, you know, I've got two ways that I prescribe it, either as a prescription 3 times a day, you know, for 10 minutes or so, or as needed. You know, if they're in a moment and they're feeling a panic attack coming on or they're noticing that they're reacting to something, start tapping, do some EFT in the moment, and it almost will always bring the intensity of whatever it is that they're experiencing down to a much more manageable level. So I love that stuff.
I know, and you've had some incredible results with it.
Yeah. In fact, I'm working with a woman now who called me. She had not been out of her house for 6 months, and she was panicked because she was panicked, but she couldn't leave her house for treatment, and she couldn't find anybody who would work with her, who would come to her house. And you know me, never say never. You know, when I hear that level of distress in someone's voice, then I could feel the tears and hear, you know, and I said, all right, well, where do you live? And she was only about 10 minutes from my office. I said, all right, we'll work something out. And so I've been, you know, going out to her house, and she's actually now taken some walks with her daughter, you know, 5 or 8 minutes outside, mm-hmm. and then she's back in again. And you'll love this. The first place they took a walk was in the cemetery across the street. I said, wow, that's kind of an interesting place to go on your first excursion out in 6 months, you know. And well, it's been amazing what she has remembered about her own childhood or what she's put together. You know, she remembered these things, but she never put them together in a way that would explain these symptoms coming on 6 months ago the way they did.
Didn't understand the impact of it. And
right. Yeah. After she suffered some losses right in a row, the agoraphobia took hold, and now she's seeing the connections, and it's amazing.
I know you do incredible work. I'm going to give out the phone number again, just in case one of the lurkers is actually going to call. It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. And since I grew up in New York, I feel like I'm supposed to say, and the number in New Jersey is, but no. you understand that joke.
Yeah, because I grew up in New Jersey.
Right. I want people to know the other stuff that you're doing and what events are coming up and that kind of thing, and about your book.
Yeah. Well, you know, we haven't really talked about, there's a whole other aspect to my practice, too. I mean, I do psychotherapy and I do energy work and I do, you know, kind of the spiritual work with people who are starting to wake up and just don't really understand, you know, who are really new to this. And I love that part. I love when people show up at my door and they're like, wow, this stuff is happening, or I've been feeling this. And all of a sudden we're having a conversation about the shift and, you know, all the things that are going on, and they're just amazed. You know, it's like they've never heard it before, and they're, you know, they're soaking it up, and where can I get more information, and what book should I read? And so I love that piece, the sort of spiritual awakening piece. But I also have a coaching practice. Well, you know, I can't believe someone's knocking at the door. Hold on one second.
This would be a good place.
He was actually trying to call through when we were on commercial, and I was afraid to click over. So he's here joining us now. Say hi, Ian. So anyway, there's a whole aspect to my business that's it's a coaching practice as well, and I work with people around what I call passion and purpose work. So it's really helping people identify, you know, what they're passionate about. I'm a dream coach and a passion test facilitator. So it's, you know, what are your dreams? What are dreams that you had maybe 20 years ago that have kind of gotten lost in the workaday world and raising children? Or maybe dreams that you had as a child that people said, oh, that'll never happen, you can never do that. So that's another part that I love, is just helping people reconnect with that part of themselves that really is feeling like they need to do something more purposeful, more passionate, something that will bring more joy and, you know, I call authenticity back into their lives, because so much of what we do feels like obligation or kind of being asleep at the wheel. You know, we just go through the day. So that's a piece. So, and I love to teach because I love to talk and I love to interact with people. So I'm doing some teaching. Actually, Saturday I'm teaching the Passion Test at the local community college here. And I will be back there again on July 16th teaching a class called Perfect Union. And that's a combination of the Law of Attraction and Emotional Freedom Technique, because I believe strongly that using EFT really opens up the channels of allowing and receiving, because it moves the blockages out of the way. So I think that they dovetail and they're a perfect blend to work together. And you, of course, will be at my center, Spirit Matters, on Friday, July 8th.
Yes.
Do you want to say a little bit about your program?
I'll be doing my signature talk, Is Everything You Know About Ghosts Dead Wrong? Which is a wonderful evening.
I hear that.
it's a wonderful evening of trying to create a context for ghosts so they make sense, so they're not creepy and weird. And spending a lot of time letting people tell their ghost stories and their paranormal experiences, which almost always start with, I've never told anybody about this, but... And then people realize that everyone in the room has one of those stories, but they've just never told anybody else because they were concerned people would think they were crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful evening. I've done it there once before, and it was well received. We had a good time.
We did. We had a really good time. So, you know, we're intending and seeing that we will have a room full of people on July 8th for David's Is Everything You Thought You Know About Ghosts Dead Wrong? Did I say that right?
Close.
Good. And the other thing that I'm really excited about, because and it feels appropriate to mention here, because we've talked about moving from psychotherapy or integrating alternative modalities into my psychotherapy. And I have recently started teaching a class at the University of Connecticut, the School of Social Work there, specifically on alternative modalities. And each time I've taught it, it's been to a full house, and people have really, really received it very well. So I have expanded it, and I'm doing a two-day version of that at Spirit Matters on August 5th and 6th. It's a Friday and a Saturday. And it'll actually be offering continuing education units for Connecticut licensed clinical social workers. So it's a wonderful class. We will be talking about all these different modalities that I've mentioned. We'll also be using a little bit of the sound healing. And my friend Owen James from the Conduit Center here will be coming probably along with at least one other person and bringing their gongs. And so we will have a gong bath experience so that the people taking the class will really be able to. It's a very profound experience to be, you know, in the center and having those gongs being played around you. People are always blown away by it. So I'm looking forward to it. As I said, it is a 10 CEUs, which is, you know,
a lot.
Social workers here have to get 15 in a year. So, you know, being able to get 10 in a two-day period at what I think is a very reasonable cost, a great bargain. So they can check that out on my website. Can I give you those?
Oh, absolutely. Tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah. So there are actually two. As I mentioned, the name of my center is Spirit Matters. So the one website is www.spiritmatterscT.com, and that will talk, you know, give a little information about the center, you know, the practitioners who are there, including Lisa and myself, and all the classes and workshops, because we have other people coming in doing workshops as well. It's not just me. We have regular ongoing things like Tai Chi and sound healings and vibrational sound meditations that are, you know, regular occurrences. And then we have, you know, workshops like yours or the one I'm giving that are also offered. So they can check Spirit Matters CT for information on the center. And then my personal website, which, you know, talks more about me specifically, what my background is, you know, the different things that I'm certified in, et cetera, is Reawaken Your Dreamer. So it's www.reawakenyourdreamer.com. I'm actually almost ready to launch the new website, probably within a couple of weeks. So the old one is still up and running, but there will be a new and improved version coming out shortly. But people can certainly check the old one. And the other thing they might find of interest when they check the site is that I will be speaking on a cruise in January. It's tough work, but somebody's got to do it.
I was going to say, you're lucky, gal.
Yeah, January of 2012, we will actually be cruising into the shift to the Mayan Peninsula, and it's a holistic cruise, so there will be many different opportunities to listen to some great teachers and attend some great workshops, one of which will be mine on the Passion Test, and connect with people who are interested in, you know, holistic and alternative modalities, spirituality, metaphysics. Right now we have about 150 people registered, and there is an early bird special. So if you register by July 15th, you receive, I think, $75 off of the already ridiculously low price of $997, which, you know, is pretty amazing for, you know, the cruise and all the food and all of that. So I don't want this to turn into a commercial, but people can link to that site from my website, the Reawaken Your Dreamer, and there is actually an affiliate code on there that will bring people right to my page. So that is going to be a lot of fun, I'm sure, because I know some of the other speakers and I know quite a few of the people who are already registered, and I think it's going to be a great way to cruise into 2012. Want to come?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
So that's some of what's going on with me.
Well, as always, you're doing interesting things. We have just a few more minutes left, so what else? What other interesting corners can we go into?
Interesting corners.
Yeah.
Well, you and I were talking for a few minutes before before we actually went on air about all of the cosmic. You know, people might be a little curious if they've been feeling a little out of sorts these last few weeks.
Right, and I had shared last week that
you did share some last week.
On the full moon with the lunar eclipse, which was not visible in North America, that right about when the lunar eclipse started, I suddenly got extremely tired and wound up taking a nap. And it sounds like you had the same experience that day.
I did. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. As I mentioned to you, I had come home. I only live about a half a mile from my office, so I had come home for lunch, and I actually had a couple of cancellations that afternoon And all of a sudden, I got exhausted, and I thought, oh, I'm going to lay on my biomat for 15 minutes or so. That usually revives me, and then I'll be ready to head back to the office. And I fell dead asleep. And it was one of those, you know how when you were a teenager and you would take a nap after school or something, and you'd wake up and you wouldn't know what day it was or what time it was? It was one of those. I woke up, and I had no idea where I was, and then I sort of realized it was the afternoon and panicked like that I was missing appointments, and fortunately I had enough time to get to the office for my next client, but
right.
Probably looked a little dazed and confused.
The worst case scenario with that, for me anyway, was falling asleep in the late afternoon and waking up in the dark.
Yeah.
And you have no idea whether it's evening, morning, what day.
Right,
all you know
day,
is,
2 days later.
Right, I just woke up and it's dark. Who am I? What time of day is it? Yeah, it's
very, very
tricky.
Speaking of the clients and looking dazed and confused, that's been my experience this whole month. And I'm blaming it on all the astrological events because, of course, you know, we had the, you know, the partial eclipse on the 1st of June, and
right.
Then the full eclipse on the full moon on the 15th.
And there were a couple of solar eclipses right around the new moon. I think there were three, some of which were only visible in places like Antarctica. But there were three alignments.
And solar flares like crazy. And then, you know, the equinox on
right.
Tuesday. And now there will be another eclipse on July 1st. So in a 30-day period. And we have the Grand Cross again, and I'm not an astrologer, so I don't really understand the full significance
right.
of this. But what I know is that I have had the most confusing 3 weeks as far as clients, people showing up on the wrong day, people showing up on, you know, at the wrong time, but the person who's supposed to be there doesn't show up. So I'm seeing people in other people's spots. It's just
who am I and why am I here?
Craziness. Yeah. Yeah. Who are you? You know, and is this, if it's Tuesday, it must be, you know, somebody else's appointment time because it's certainly not mine. But yeah, so it's been really kind of crazy, and I'm hoping it's going to settle down. But I have a feeling it's going to get a little crazier before it does.
In all likelihood. And it'll the kind of craziness will probably change, but it's not likely to settle down very soon. But it's going to change all of us so that we can tolerate these shifts more easily. Won't get knocked around so much. But on the way, it'll be tricky.
That's the other thing, though, that I feel like is really important for me to be doing, because a lot of the people that I work with are really not aware of this at all.
Right.
And so, you know, when they come into my office, supposedly for psychotherapy, so our conversation often goes in a different direction. And when I start to talk to them about, you know, some of these shifts and changes, or, you know, perhaps looking at something from a more spiritual perspective, you know, I feel like I'm sort of the bridge between the two worlds. You know, I'm not talking to people who all know this stuff. I mean, I do talk to them when I talk to my friends, but I feel like it's my job to be the bridge and to keep connecting those two worlds for people.
Well, we're about to go through a bridge as well, because we're almost done.
Alrighty, then.
We'll give your website again. It's spiritmattersct.com. And Reawaken Your Dreamer. I want to thank Kathy Ewing for being my wonderful guest this evening on The Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. See you next week on Empower Radio.
Good night now.
I wasn't going to school because I was just making money stealing cars. And one day I was put into juvie for 2 stolen cars, robbery of a house, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Well, I was 10 when I first got involved with drugs. I skipped school because, you know, nobody cared. I mean, I was on drugs, and my mom didn't really care because she was on drugs and she was never home.
When I first got pregnant, school was not important to me, so I dropped out. And now that I'm 15, I have 2 babies.
I was heading nowhere. I just thought the only way I can make something out of my life is that if I get an education. One day I was locked up. That's when I really realized that, I mean, it wasn't for me. Like, I was only in there 2 months, but to me, that was enough. It'd be better for me to stay in school, just get my education.
I still need to go to school to make it for myself.
Stay in school. Give yourself a chance.
I think I'm happier now. I know I'm happier now.
A public service message brought to